I do think that people buy stuff because influence is influence, but I do think it's gone away from those people who had thousands and thousands of followers. I don't think you need to have that anymore.
No.
I think that someone with 500 followers can really have such an impact.
Hi, you're listening to Bake the Podcast with me, Aisha Baker. Today, I talk to social media guru and whiz kid, Talia Goldberg. She recently left Seattle Coffee as the head of their social media, but I spoke to her when she was still with the coffee company about how she had changed the brand and what she thinks about social media today. Enjoy this insightful conversation with Talia.
Welcome back to Bake the Podcast. I hope you guys have been enjoying the podcast so far and tuned into our other episodes, which were all super awesome with some really empowering women. Today we are at Work & Co. on Bree Street, which is a really cool creative space. And we have the beautiful and extremely dynamic Talia Goldberg in the house.
What up?
Yay! So for those of you who don't know Talia, Talia is the creative director of Seattle Coffee Co.
Yes.
And the mastermind behind the new brand direction. So Talia, what I wanted to chat to you about today is obviously all the amazing work that you've done with Seattle. But before we get into that, yes, let's talk about you.
Yes.
So I obviously know you from the blogger world.
Yes.
I don't want to use the swear word influencer on this podcast.
We weren't even influencers then.
I know.
We literally
what the fuck
were
is an
bloggers.
Influencer?
We were bloggers.
I'm like, what's an influencer? I don't know what the fuck that is. So before influencers, there was bloggers.
Yes.
And everyone always refers to me as the OG blogger, which annoys me because I'm actually not the OG blogger. You were part of the original five, I think, of
us. I would
us.
Call it the original five.
Yeah, the five of us that started doing this in South Africa. And what made you give up blogging?
Why did I give up blogging? I think I could see where blogging was going in terms of, I could see overseas people were updating their blogs less and less. And yeah. I found myself reading blogs less and less. Like when I started blogging, I would read blogs every single day and there was content every single day. And then, you know, like Instagram killed the blogging star and it became this influencer thing and it became a lot more about what you look like and posting pictures of yourself and that very Chiara Ferragni type thing where she'd stop blogging. It was like completely just Instagramming, and I could see that that was the direction it was going into. And you know, also at the time, in terms of brands, they're like so far behind in South Africa, and like no one was really wanting to pay that much for content, and it was taking a lot of time to produce the content and write it. And I was like, how am I going to grow this readership if I know personally, like I've stopped reading blogs? Why would anyone come read mine? Why don't I just do a longer caption? So that's kind of what I did at the time.
Did you move over to Instagram, or did you like? Did you migrate over, or were you just like, oh, I'm done with this, I'm gonna like do my own thing?
I left it up for a while, and then remember I started Nifty, and I was like, well, this is kind of the thing that I want to do.
Nifty is Talia's original startup that she basically designed along with her partner at the time, a business partner, this really cool eventing experience, I guess, where you could print your own Instagrams and social media. Was it also social media or just Instagram?
So it was basically just Instagrams. Actually, there was tweets also if there was like a live hashtag. So we called it social printing, and then we would do it for like big brands. First one we did was Mr. Price. And then obviously we had the website also where you could like order all your photos. And I saw at the time, I was like, I can either blog and try run this thing, or I can do freelance social media for another company, which is not something I really wanted to do. Or this Nifty opportunity kind of just landed in our laps almost. And I was like, this is something that I can scale that's bigger than me.
Yeah. And you were so passionate about it.
I loved it
every day.
I loved it.
And that's what I love about you. When you get like super into something, you're so into it. Like, I think you remind me a little bit of Raisa Ragona, which I know we love her from Revolve. How you like live the brand, like whatever brand you currently working on, whether it's your own personal startup or a company like Seattle, you love the ethos of the brand.
I'm upset. Like, and that's on also honestly like how I choose the jobs or how I land up in those spaces, because like I could never work for a company that I wasn't obsessed with. Like after Nifty, I was offered some other jobs, and it was just like, I'm not obsessed with these brands. Like I can't really fake pretend that I like something I don't.
So did you go to Seattle? Okay, this is like the most disorganized podcast, but I really want to know this question. So did you go to Seattle and tell them they needed a creative director, or was that position available for you?
Neither.
Okay.
So I'd been offered a job as creative director of another startup, and then they found me after I sold Nifty, and then we got to salary negotiations, and they offered me an amount of money that was just a joke that I was just like,
Especially because now you'd obviously owned your own business and you got used to a certain lifestyle as an entrepreneur and also a successful entrepreneur because Nifty was very successful.
And I said to them, like, I'll freelance your social media for this, but I'm not being the creative director for this amount of money. Like, it's a joke. So I said no to that. And then I sat around for a few months and I was trying to figure out what I was going to do next.
Yeah.
And I posted on Twitter that I was looking to do some freelance social media if there was anyone who was looking. And I don't know if you know Miss Moss. She was also one of the OGs.
Like,
I feel like she never really like blogged personal stuff. It was more she curated the web in the most unbelievable way. And she messaged me on Twitter and was like, why don't you just message Seattle? Like, they really need some help. Like, you're their biggest fan.
Yeah.
So I literally was there every single morning on the way to Nifty. I would get a Seattle. I would like Snapchat me in the car singing with my Seattle in my hand. And I was posting every morning that I was going there. And she was like, you're obsessed with them. Why don't you just email them and see if you can help them with their social media? And I was like, that is such a good idea.
And you know what? That's the kind of like shit I love about Twitter. I love Twitter. Twitter is so like, it's such a female empowerment space because like I've gotten so much help from like Twitter friends, like whether it's like advice on like I needed a lawyer.
Yeah.
And one of my friends just DM'd me. She's like, my lawyer is really great. You should use her. And she's like, not expensive. And, and now I'm using her. So it's like really awesome space for women just to share like resources and like advice and tips. And I love that we've got that. It's not as negative and toxic as it used to be. Besides the like cancel culture and stuff.
I did see that post about the person who was complaining that you were fake tall.
Oh my God.
On Twitter, which is like,
but I didn't find that toxic.
Seen.
I just find it like a comedic moment. I'm like, how do you care this much about someone's art? Like, it's not normal. This isn't Instagram. Please take that comment to Instagram. So I love that Twitter's that female space and like where women can like engage on their goals and dreams and stuff. And I love that Miss Moss, what's her real name?
Diana.
How Diana helped you and like coming to this decision and getting a job that you
But the best thing ever was then she had slid into my DMs and said that. And I was like, that is such a good idea. And then I said to her, do you by any chance have an email address for anyone there? And she was like, yeah, sure.
Oh my gosh.
She literally gave me Pete, who's the co-founder of Seattle's email address. So I emailed them and that's how I got the first meeting. And the first meeting was really about social media. And apparently they only actually had the meeting with me because, I mean, they get tons of requests for meetings to do all different types of things. They'd only had the meeting with me apparently because I used to hassle them and rash them on Twitter all the time. Oh, when are you getting almond milk? When are you getting almond milk? Why don't you have almond milk?
They're like, we better meet this lady or she might
they could
roast us.
Yeah, and they were like, when are you opening in Seapoint? Why haven't you opened in Seapoint yet? Yeah. Like, we need you. And so they could see that I was really like a huge fan of the brand. So they had the meeting and I don't think they were expecting anything out of it.
So did you come there with like a proposal? Did you like design a pitch for them or were you just like, let's talk?
I was like, let's talk, let's have a meeting. And it ended up being a 3-hour meeting.
Oh my gosh.
With Pete and Barry, the two co-founders. And at the end of the meeting, I got really much the impression that they really did not care for social media.
Oh, really?
This was not something they were interested in doing. To be honest, Seattle has never, ever done marketing. It's just not part of their brand at all.
Well, up until now, and I think it's so notable.
Please tell them that.
No, it really is notable because everyone's talking about I don't know if you know that everyone's talking about like, Seattle.
I mean, I can see it, which is so nice.
Everyone's suddenly talking about Seattle, and it's just so funny because like, I think we all consumed it and loved the coffee and stuff, but no one really like was
it wasn't
inspired
a cool
to share
brand,
it wasn't shareable.
No.
It was like, oh, let's just go to Caltex and get a Seattle.
Yeah, and it was just the thing you did. And I think the thing with Seattle is they always said the coffee was always good, and that's why you kept going back. And the baristas and the service was always good and always so friendly. And you can and they always had that like secret sauce. But I think in terms of the way that the brand was presented,
it
wasn't cool in the way that other brands were necessarily cool.
Yes, and they didn't put. You could see they put no effort behind. I think they didn't. They were probably just clueless.
I think it was like they had all that branding done for 21 years and it really just hadn't been looked at. 21 years last year in November, 22 this year. Yeah. So like none of the stuff had really changed very much over the 22 years. It was the same mags, it was the same cups,
it
was
the same
t-shirts and logos. Nothing had really changed.
Explain to me what the change in the logo was, because I see you like saying, can you spot the change? And I'm like, I have been drinking this coffee for so long, I do
not
know
even see the difference.
Yeah.
So on the takeaway cups, we changed to the tiger for a while, which
I love the tiger.
Also, I think a lot of people did not get, I mean, there were very few people who didn't get it, and we got a few complaints of like, what happened comments.
Really?
Below, but literally.
Complaints.
So we only actually got like 2 complaints. So one person said it looked like a cheap imitation knockoff from China. Someone like legitimately emailed
That's kind of and racist.
And then someone, apparently a class at one design school, thought that we had completely changed our logo to the tiger permanently.
Oh.
And didn't realize that it was a limited edition cup and they couldn't really understand.
But I thought the messaging on social media was very clear that it was limited.
Yeah, I thought so too. But it's
maybe because I know you and I saw you talking about it.
And I think that's the thing with social media is that like when you're in that kind of like that bubble. Ecosystem and that bubble, you'll see all my content. But like some people have never heard of Seattle, never had a cup before. And like it pops up in someone else posting about it and they're suddenly like, oh, Seattle. Yeah. And I feel like it's one of those things where you start seeing things. It's like when you think about a new car you want to buy. And you think, oh, I really want a Mini. And suddenly every single car, it's that car.
Totally. So besides the, obviously you changed the, I think you made logo. Another change.
So the logo, it used to be, do you remember that the logo used to be in like a block? And then Seattle Coffee Company was floating below it in white. So we put the whole thing in a blue block. In a blue box, and I think it looks a lot more chic and put together and timeless.
And I also discovered through your guys' social media that
yes,
the logo was actually very intense, like a takeaway cup. I thought it was a skyscraper and like a coffee cup.
So everyone thinks it's that, and I mean, I saw that for years and years. It wasn't until just before I got the job that I was actually like staring at the logo and I realized it's actually a short cup, tall, grande, paper packet and a syrup bottle.
Wow.
And
you should actually do a competition on like what it looks like and give away coffee, I think.
We did like a whole thing on that and people were like, my mind is blown.
Yeah, and like I was...
And also once you see it, you can't unsee it.
Yes,
because like you've seen the skyscrapers for years and years and like that made sense.
Yeah, it still makes sense to me. It's like Seattle, oh, there might be a city there. So where does the whole Seattle coffee name come from? Is it like a Seattle... Seattle
is obviously the city where coffee started, where Starbucks started, and coffee culture, like that kind of coffee culture came from the whole second wave of coffee
culture.
That kind of like second wave where like you took the Italian coffee and you kind of made like frappuccinos and your freezers and that kind of thing. And then Seattle Coffee Company actually started in London.
Oh, wow.
In 1995, I think, and all of those London branches were eventually sold to Starbucks, and they all became Starbucks, which is why people sometimes think that Seattle and Starbucks are connected, but they're not actually.
Okay, I see.
And then Pete, who's one of my bosses, he had actually gone to London, and he was working at Seattle Coffee in London, and he said to them, this is before they sold, can I get the franchise rights to bring it to South Africa? And they had kind of agreed to that, and at the same time, a guy who was the CEO of Exclusive Books at the time had tried Seattle Coffee in London and was like, I need to have this in Exclusive Books. And they were like, well, we've already promised it to Pete.
Yeah.
So why don't you guys chat? And that's how the first one in Cavendish actually opened.
Oh, wow. And the first one was Cavendish
in Exclusive Books. And that's my first recollection.
That's also mine, like when you were in school.
Yes. And I would go then. Remember, it was literally connected. So you could literally, I thought it was so cool. I could never afford those huge W magazines and the T magazines.
Even the Vogue seasonal, I think it's like almost R1,000 now. I actually read it the other day when I was having a coffee at Seattle. Yeah, I went to Exclusive in the waterfront. My sister and I were there doing some wedding planning stuff. And I was like, let's just go into Exclusive Books to look at the wedding magazines. Yeah. And then we're like, oh, we'll grab a coffee. And then we're reading the wedding magazines. And like I was reading the Vogue. And I'm like, oh, these are so expensive. I can't afford them. So I'll just read them now.
And that was my first kind of impression of the brand. And I was obsessed with it. And I remember you could have all the different syrups. And you could really like customize your coffee in a way that you couldn't anywhere else. And I mean, for a very long time, and I mean still now, you can't really get good coffee in most of South Africa.
Yeah, it's really difficult to get good coffee, and it's difficult to have the experience that I think your guys' brand gives
on a large scale.
Yeah, like I love like the little treats, like the cakes and stuff. I love treats. So for me, it's like I always think of like the Seattle lemon meringue. It's like so good. Is that vegan?
No,
it's not.
The only things that are vegan are the stuff that we've just launched now, and they're only in Cape Town for now, but hopefully going to be rolled out. And we've got the millionaire shortbreads. That's the vegan treat, and then a couple of sandwiches and some wraps.
Oh, cool. And then you guys are doing almond milk now, which is so great.
We've always had almond milk. Now we could just launch macadamia. And I'm not sure when this podcast is going live, but there is a 4th milk alternative.
It's going live soon. In September or November, so I don't know if that's too late.
I think you'll have oat milk by then.
Yay!
And I mean, how long have you wanted oat milk? I want an oat milk.
I love oat milk. So when I'm in the UK, because a lot of you guys know that I live in the UK for half of the year, and I became lactose intolerant after my child. After I gave birth to my son, I just suddenly couldn't tolerate any dairy, which is a blessing and a curse. Because I was like, what
does
the
it
fuck?
Make your throat sore? Or you just
it like
sick?
Makes me literally sprint to the toilet. Like I'm talking about it's a story that I probably shouldn't share in a podcast, but I'm gonna share.
Sure.
I was in the UK with my husband, and we were like just doing like window shopping, and he was like, "Do you want a coffee?" So I was like, "Yeah," and he ordered me a cappuccino. I always have one. I always have a cappuccino, and he has a flat white. And he came and he brought the coffee to me, and I forgot to remind him because obviously I just become intolerant, so he doesn't know that I need
almond milk. Or
he just forgets.
Milk,
yeah. So actually, he's also started going dairy free because it's too stressful for him. So he orders like a normal cappuccino. I drink it, and we're in WHS looking at books, and I literally say to him, "Oh my god!" He goes, "What's wrong?" I'm like, "Oh my god! Oh my god! I'm gonna shit in my pants!" He goes, No. And he goes, "Okay, wait," and we like do this whole recon, and Khalid's sleeping in the pram, and he goes, "Oh, that cafe like down the street has a nice bathroom," and I'm like, "Oh my god, I'm so embarrassed, I'm gonna cry and he goes, "No, and we start running.
Sprinting.
Literally
to
running to this cafe. And I just I'm screaming like, Lift, because I didn't know where the place was that he had been to. And I like run inside. I'm like, "Hi there, table for three, please." And I like run to the bathroom. And I was just like so humiliated. And then after that incident, I
never again.
I won't even try dairy. I won't even mess around with it. I'm like, it's so embarrassing.
You got PTSD from
that. No, I've got proper PTSD. So now I obviously explore oat milk, coconut milk. I've never had macadamia milk, but done cashew milk. And in the UK, I mostly do almond or coconut oil.
I think they're such delicious alternatives.
Yes, because why do you even need milk?
You don't. I mean, when I went...
I hate milk now.
Yeah, I went dairy for like over 10 years ago, I think. And at the time, the only option, literally the only option, was soy.
Imagine.
And I forced myself to have it and I drank it, but it was never great. Like, it was drinkable, but it has a very severe taste, especially when you go back to like an almond, which is a lot more chilled.
And soy's not actually good for you, so
no, and it's very hectic, the taste.
Yeah,
it doesn't mix well with the coffee. It doesn't like bring out the flavors.
Yeah.
But I think the almond, the macadamia, the oats like work so
much
better.
For me is the most like creamy as well.
And the most neutral, I think, also, yeah.
So I'm definitely a fan of that, and I'm excited that it's launching soon.
I'm so excited.
But let's quickly discuss I think how you guys are doing user-generated content with Seattle's profile.
Yes.
I really love that you don't work exclusively with like the quote-unquote influencers.
Yes.
Because like for me, I think, I haven't said this on the podcast yet, but I do feel the influencer bubble has burst in South Africa. And it's no longer lucrative, I think, for the influencers and neither for the brands.
Because
people have just become so wise to, like, the digital space, what kind of content you can get from each different, like, avenue. And I think the consumer is really smart now. So what I liked about, and I noticed that you guys were doing, is that you were encouraging your consumers to post their experiences and then sharing that. To love.
So I believe way more in user-generated content, and that's what I've always believed in.
Yeah.
And I've never believed in hiring a photographer and getting them to shoot 30 images for your
feed coffee.
Of the same people, and it's like all graded the same.
Yeah.
That looks very boring. And I think there was a time when Instagram aesthetics was very important. Your feed had to look
a
certain
way.
I think
3 years of like the whole preset thing.
Yeah. And I think now it's become a lot more, and I think also it's shifted in terms of they're obviously more Gen Zs on Instagram, and they're a lot more posting their pimples, flaw and all, no filters. And I think it's moving more towards that.
I think, you know what it is about social media that's changed for me, like being in this space for 10 years, not only social media, but the digital space. What I've noticed a massive change is that like, with that the Gen Zs have brought actually, is that there's like this, for them, social media is just like normal. It's not like, for
they
us, it was exciting.
It.
Yes,
yeah.
It was like just a normal part of life. So it's like, you know, it's just another normal thing. It's like magazines were for us. So for them sharing stuff, it's not really like a big deal. It doesn't have to be curated. They're not like afraid to share.
I feel like theirs is a lot more authentic. It's just like you took a picture standing outside the library and it's kind of grainy and it doesn't have a filter on it. And it's very like the whole euphoria generation.
Yes.
You just post it and like it's just you. I think they would almost be embarrassed by the thought of having like a photographer with a Canon 5D Mark III. Then you're going to go put it in Lightroom.
It's just
then
awkward.
filter it, and it's like so fake by the time. And like that content definitely has a place, and I mean, but I think the magazines did that better.
I think magazines definitely generated high quality content better. And I think like when the blogging world was around, it was kind of cool to have a camera.
And it was fun, and it was, I think it was,
it was all about fun, and you could see, yeah, it was authentic because you could see the blogger was having fun doing it. And now you enjoyed watching that.
I think now it just feels so staged, and it feels so stale almost, and I feel like it's same of the same, and like I literally can't tell the difference. And everyone, also the makeup, everyone with the contouring, and I feel like everyone's faces started to look the same. Like I literally can't tell the difference. You know,
I'm even gonna take that a step further, like aesthetic procedures. Like if I see the same nose walking around or the same lips, like the whole of Cape Town is
the
identical.
Same nude lips,
and
the
they're identical
eyebrows.
Like filler on the cheekbone that's like kind of raised, and the it's called pillow face. I don't know if you know about that, but it's like when you put too much filler in your face and it starts to squish, and then your eyes like go crunchy.
That's not good.
And a lot of people have that same look, and the fake butt, and the, you know, the Kylie Jenner aesthetic,
the Kylie Jenner and Kim Kardashian. And I think that has a place, and I think that some people, that is the ultimate goal. I mean, how many people have you seen that you're like, this could be Kylie, this could be Kim? They literally all want to look the same.
But don't you think it's dead?
I think it's dead. Unfortunately, some people have changed their whole faces to look like
that. It's so sad.
You can't really turn back on surgical procedures.
I know.
I mean, it's, I guess,
sad.
The fillers kind of fill
the fillers
out.
Dissolve, but it's there for life still because you've injected it.
So it's also the whole Huda Beauty, and it's a very much a look. And I think for some people, that look is still going to be the look for probably 5-10 years. But I do think have you watched Euphoria?
I haven't yet. No,
you are going to be obsessed.
I was actually just watching The Bachelorette. Which is also more real, by the way.
Is it?
Yeah, they've changed the... So the reason why I watched it is because they've changed the brand.
Okay.
So the brand of The Bachelorette was this really curated love experience. And then they got this girl in, Hannah Brown, who's like super authentic and goofy and like just different to the usual. And then she slept with, I think, two of the guys or three of the guys on the show.
Yeah.
And she got slut shamed for it. And then she like fought back, and she was like, you know what, like, why is it okay for guys to do this and not me?
Yeah.
And it was just like a really cool moment, I think, for television, for a brand like The Bachelor.
Yeah.
So I was like, I need to watch the season to see what happens. So I literally committed like a full week to watching it. And now I want to start Euphoria.
I mean, I think it's going to make you terrified that have a son.
Oh, gosh.
Who's growing up. And I mean, that's now. I mean, in 10, 15 years, when he's that age, it's going to be crazy.
But I think things self-correct, though. Don't you think? Like, at first it's crazy, and then it self-corrects. Like,
I think it's a different stage in terms of like Gen Z just growing up with cell phones. And like, if you think your first boyfriend or the first people that you met, like, there wasn't this texting and there wasn't this instantness to it. Like, if you think that we went out on a Monday night, like, I used to go to Mercury Mondays and I had my little funny
Do
you remember like your pink disposable Sony camera?
Oh,
and you would take all those fucking selfies of yourself with the camera.
The
but then
and you could go through the film later on.
Yes,
and
you would
like
go through it later on, and you would have to plug it into your laptop. Then you would have to choose the photos, and you'd always choose the ones where you kind of look nice.
Yeah.
And then you would post it later, and that was like I was drunk at the time, and then the next day I wasn't drunk and I could look at these with like fresh eyes, where I think we didn't have Instagram story where we could instantly in
make
a moment post it live. And I think there's like so much can go wrong with that instantness that I think we were so lucky that we didn't have. Just like someone could take a video of you now and just post it, and it could go viral.
It scares
me
so much, like how instant things are. And like someone was saying that on Twitter, there was some drama about some guy he had recorded him and his girlfriend or a girl he was dating having sex and put it on Pornhub.
Yeah.
And it was just like that would never happen in my generation. It's like it wasn't even a thought to secretly record.
No.
Because you couldn't. You'd have to like
your
put
camera
up a
was
camera.
Huge. It was a VHS. Like everyone
like
could
how
see
are you
it.
Gonna secretly record? So I think like it does scare me the way things are going. But I also think, you know, we kind of fucked up and we created, or I actually will take responsibility. I created some of the like celebrityism in the influencer space in Cape Town, and it always like haunts me because I see like a million
people trying to live up.
No,
to
a
that.
Million mini me's like doing the same thing I did before, and it's like cringe. And then I'm like, I created this problem, and but then it's self corrected, and now you get like these really genuine influencers, and I see brands who I and you as well helped to like invest in this market now, yeah, changing and saying, actually, we need like a bit more connection, a bit more soul,
yeah,
a bit more genuineness.
And not that you'll just say,
and it's still beautiful content.
It is still beautiful content, and I still think it works. I do think that people buy stuff because influence is influence, but I do think it's gone away from those people who had thousands and thousands of followers. I don't think you need to have that anymore.
No.
I think that someone with 500 followers can really have such an impact.
I think my sister now has like 10K followers or something.
She's doing so well. She makes me want to work out all the time.
She doesn't care about it. She doesn't give two shits about the followers.
But it's also because
she'll be like, oh, I have this many followers. I don't care.
But it's also because it's not, she didn't make that like her life. Like,
yes,
that's a side thing that she does. Like when she's at gym, she posts about it, or yeah, she gets this new
and
protein
it's so
shake.
Genuine.
And it's fun. And it's like, she's not trying very hard. Yeah. But I think other people would like literally go and buy an outfit, or they've got, do you remember, yes, how many people would go to like Country Road, shoot an outfit and return it?
And then return it. People still do that.
I'm sure they do.
It's like,
it's terrible.
It's like a disease, but it,
of consumerism.
It's a consumerist disease. But the nice thing about like, what I'm saying about the self-correction, I think each generation starts to like self-correct and figure out how to use this new dynamic and
in
make
a better
it work.
Way.
Yeah, make it work for them, yeah, make it positive. And I love that like the content kind of went to this weird like trashy content to people like showing too much realness.
Yeah.
And then it went to like, oh, we can still take cute pictures, like a cute flat lay and post it, even though I'm going to my job at Allen Gray.
Yeah.
Like, I can still take a flat lay. Like, why not?
Why not?
I love that. And I love that Seattle showcases the content from their customers and fans who are like from all walks of life. I think it's more real for me to go to a brand and see that, like, my, you know, lady that does my nails, that is Seattle, and her picture got like featured. It's, yeah, just like a cool moment.
I think it's so much more fun because I think most people now expect all the brands to have the same list of people, and I could make the list. Like, I, yeah, know that there's like a certain 30 or 40 people,
yeah,
that everyone works with, and I could sit and go through them. And I just, Seattle has so many fans and we get tagged in so much stuff, and because the product is so good, people tag us all the time. And then so I went and created two hashtags. The one was Seattle with Wings, and then the other was Sipping in Seattle. And then I just kept using it, and it, the truth was, we got so much content of people who weren't influencers,
yeah,
but it
official
are
influencers.
They aren't officially influencers,
yeah, they're the Department of Influence.
You get your badge for the month, you influence,
yeah, like,
me,
yeah, paid my monthly fee.
But because we started posting them and sitting in a very natural way and something that wasn't superposed, and they were uploading really nice quality images, and then I just visco cam it slightly, add, yeah, the same filter. So
I was gonna ask you, do you slightly edit the usage?
Yeah, definitely.
Good, because I was gonna say, wow, everyone that drinks Seattle coffee is so creative. They're like, they have Lightroom on their phones.
So I think the minimum requirement for me is always that it's a good quality photo, and then I'll, yeah, take it into visco cam and I'll change like the exposure, sharpen it a bit, throw a tiny little, or like change the contrast, throw a tiny bit of the same filter on, just so that they all have like a slight blue tinge to it, like,
yes,
a navy tinge, which is very Seattle to me. And then I upload it, but it's like really not a lot of work.
Yeah, and you do this all on your iPhone.
Literally all on my iPhone.
That's amazing. I love that.
I mean, at the beginning, we did some barista shots with my camera, and I was like, why am I?
I know.
It takes
I actually
so much
camera
work.
Shots. It's like, it fucks with me.
And also, like, then your feed, it's like, I either want it to be all professional or all iPhone. Like, it's, yeah, a weird one. It's, yeah.
It's so funny because I was working with this Gen Z.
Like, what's a camera?
No, he was so, I was consulting on a local fashion brand.
Yeah.
Because I'm also in that phase that you were in, where I'm like trying a bunch of things and seeing what works for me. And I was consulting on this brand, and I met this guy, and we were working together on a campaign for the brand. And he taught me so much about like just using what you have, you know, like,
yeah,
he doesn't have a fancy camera.
Yeah.
He's like, oh no, we'll just shoot on the iPhone. I'm like, what? It's not going to be like high res. He's like, why? We're not going to put it on a billboard. And I'm
yeah,
yeah, that's true. And he's like, it's for Instagram. I'm like, who cares? And he just told me like the advice he gave me on my profile. He was like, you know what? I'd love to see more of, because he obviously started following me. He's like, I'd love to see you just try things, like just try different ways of like, you know, doing things. And I think Kylie Jenner did that with her brand. Like, usually you'd have a brand Bible and you'd release,
yeah,
like the products would all have the same packaging and whatever.
That's very boring.
Yeah. And she was like, no, I'm going to have different packaging for each of my like releases.
Yeah.
Which is so like out of this world. Like,
but that gets the hype, because if you think like Estee Lauder does a new drop, their double wear foundation, great, but it, like, it all looks the same. They have not changed their packaging in like 8 million years, where Kylie Jenner launches something new. And I think the thing is, we're living in this phase. It still is Instagram, and people want Instagrammable things. And I think that's like why Glossier blew up in the way that it did, because it did a whole brand that was literally based on creating cool shit for Instagram.
And it was like millennial pink, the
millennial pink. They killed color. Millennial pink.
They killed it. They killed it.
I'm done with millennial pink on every level.
I know. It's like, come up with a new. So my event that I'm running is called the Millennial Mama. And it's like my life's work now, because I'm obviously really passionate about being a mom. And when the designer was designing our logo, I was like, you know, like, I really wanted to be millennial pink, but millennial pink is so overdone. Yeah, and then she came up with something cool. But
what color are you now?
It's like
millennial purple.
No, it's not millennial purple. It's still millennial pinkish. But we, instead of doing millennial pink, we're doing like this really cool green that's like brings out the pink and makes it look more interesting, like a dark green. So she's really cool, and she's like on the cusp of like, I feel like she's a Gen Z thinker. Love so it. I'm like, I'm all about the Gen Zs. They're so dynamic.
Cool. They're so cool.
They are, and what they're doing with like changing the game in like all senses of the word is so interesting for me. And like, especially stepping out of that influencer space and like just observing everything, and now like things are just dying. It's like things are just bombing around me, and I'm like, everything's dead. Like, how are you people making money? This is dead. And then seeing them come up and like do really cool things with social media, like making a difference and like launching their own brands or just telling stories. And that's what I think you guys have really tapped into as well. It's like telling the story of the user enjoying the coffee. I think you posted a lot on your Twitter too.
I love Twitter. I've always loved social media, and Twitter is probably still my favorite.
Yeah, I love talking shit.
I mean, I put my Twitter actually on private now because.
Oh, really?
It's been on private for a while because I used to have. I think my problem used to be I used to have too much of an opinion.
Yeah.
And it used to get me in trouble sometimes. So now I put it on private, which means I can kind of share my opinion a little bit more freely because I know it's not going to get retweeted and blown up in the same way.
So is your Instagram open?
My Instagram's also on private. I put everything on private. Once I got this job at Seattle, I put everything on private.
Oh, well, you had to, right? Because it's better for the brand.
I didn't have to. No one asked me to. And it wasn't a thing. I was just like, I think I got to the point where I was like, I'm going to do this. This is a full-time job now. Yeah. Like, I care so much about this. I don't care about followers anymore. Like, there was a point that I cared about having followers and I cared about working with brands. I haven't worked with brands in over a year since I worked with Seattle.
I just want to say also the comment on, like, not caring about followers. Like, for everyone listening, because a lot of people are so obsessed with this. I'm like,
I used to be, like, I always wanted followers.
But followers means nothing.
I know. It's just a stupid number. Nothing. Especially when it's so easy to buy followers. It's so easy to buy irrelevant. Likes. It's ridiculous.
Even on a brand scale, like, I still obviously work with brands in my job, and I have meetings with brand directors all the time. And they don't give a flying F about how many people follow you. They care about, they literally read the comments. And, like, one of my brands was saying, if he sees people commenting like a lot of emojis on your post, like a lot of like flame emojis, and
it's
like
a bot doing it.
No, he doesn't even say it's a bot. Even if it's real people, he's like, that's not the conversation I want about my brand.
Lazy, yeah,
it's like, I don't want people to be like flame emojis and look at my brand. So he's like, I want them to actually engage with the brand. And if they don't care about you, they're just gonna comment like flame. And then it's like, I don't care, I'm just commenting for the sake of it.
And I think that also the other thing that I think is interesting with Instagram is now they're getting rid of the likes.
Yes.
I've also noticed engagement has completely dropped on your actual feed. I think that everyone's watching stories, and it's impossible to scroll horizontally and vertically. You're doing one or the other.
Yeah.
Like, there's just too much content on it. Like, do you remember when Instagram was literally chronological photos?
I miss the good old days.
And you would put that, what was that first filter on, the great filter that everyone used? I can't even remember.
It was like the most popular filter of all
Everyone
time.
Used the same filter. You literally took your photo, you filtered it in Instagram, and you posted it.
Yeah.
You put your caption, you were done. I mean,
Mayfair.
We've literally like ruined everything by making it so complicated.
Instagram for me is very complicated. Now I click on the explore page, I can buy stuff, I can watch stuff, I can watch professional videos, I can watch stories, I can watch, I can see stuff on your feed. I'm like, I know too much about you.
But it's almost like they really wanted to create something that you can't put down. And I don't like that. Like, I love reading. I like doing other things. Like, I don't want to be
I think that's why the founders left. because they're like, we don't want this. Like,
well, the founders of WhatsApp also left, and I think that had a lot to do with necessarily like Facebook not necessarily
Facebook
being the
ruins
best.
Everything. That's the worst company.
Do you know they're changing the name to Instagram, like by Facebook or something?
Oh my gosh.
And they're going to change WhatsApp to Instagram, like WhatsApp by Facebook or something like that.
Oh my God, that's
he literally
really
wants
sad.
The credit.
I feel like these apps are all dying though.
Yeah.
Like slowly. Like Instagram, yes, they're doing the you can't put me down thing. But I think that that's pushing people to like just not.
But I mean, I saw that TikTok is now on 500 million users.
Whoa.
I read on Business of Fashion yesterday.
But I can't fuck with TikTok. Can you just explain TikTok to me?
I've tried.
I don't understand it.
I've literally got my boss's 10-year-old daughter to give me lessons. I'm going to pay someone else to do it.
So does she use TikTok? What does she create on there?
She creates these really funny, great videos. And I actually think TikTok is so cool if you are
if you get it.
If you're like 8 to probably like 17 and you want a creative outlet that's just fun and quite instant and you can play around with it, like there's so much fun that
I
you can
like
have on
cool
it.
I see like some cool dancing videos on there because I'm a fan of dancing videos.
And
I
it's
love
quite
it
wholesome dance. Almost.
Really?
It's like wholesome meets like fun creativity without like caring so much.
Because all I see on TikTok is like people singing, mouthing their favorite song to the camera.
I'll show you some videos.
Okay,
some really
I need to see some other stuff. Because I found this cool, I tweeted it the other day, this dad and his daughter dancing
to
a song. And I was like, this is so fun. Like, that's the kind of stuff I want to watch.
And that's like wholesome.
If I see someone doing another, rolling their eyes, sticking their tongue out and singing their favorite song, it's done. Like, please stop.
And then the other thing I read on Business of Fashion yesterday was apparently Snapchat is making a comeback.
Oh, yeah?
Apparently, their users are up again.
Oh,
and I think
wow.
that's again. Remember how cool Snapchat was? I love Snapchat when it started. Yeah. Because it was so closed and there were no brands on it. So we could literally post whatever we wanted. And you could literally see you had like maximum like 300-400 followers.
Yes.
Maybe you had a few thousand.
I had a couple
but it,
was, of thousand,
but it
yeah.
wasn't the same as Instagram. Where
yeah.
It wasn't that.
It was more real.
It was more real. And then, like,
I loved
you knew
it.
Like no brand was going to watch what you were saying. Like yeah. where
even now, I don't even post on Instagram. I just post stories. And, back in the Snapchat days, I was like addicted.
I love Snapchat.
I would sing to my Snapchat. I would have
me
DMCs
too.
With my Snapchat. I would drive and have like a live Q&A with my Snapchat. It was like the best thing ever. And now Snapchat is gone. Well,
I think Kylie left and then
everyone removed themselves
once,
with
it. Once Instagram stories thing, you had all the followers.
But Kylie
there.
Is now everywhere and all over.
I'm sure she is.
But it's the same stories that she the team posts
is
on
it?
All of the apps.
It must be nice to have a whole team.
I know. I mean, I would love a whole team. Speaking of a whole team, do you have a whole team working on Seattle?
Depends what your definition of a team is.
Okay.
So I have Megs, who is the community manager. So any complaints and compliments,
okay.
she deals with all of that.
All the gross work. That's horrible. Yeah. I would not want to be the complaints person.
I mean, I got to say that we do get a lot more compliments than complaints.
That's
and
good.
The complaints are really far, few and far between. They're really not that many, which again is like how good Seattle is at a brand that they generally resolve complaints at the store level. So it doesn't come through that much. Lots of compliments, which she also replies to. And then I have Michelle, who is the designer, art director, and that is pretty much the team.
So did you hire an art director when you joined? Because I don't think they had one before.
So
right?
they had a designer at the time and she kind of didn't work out.
Okay.
So then I needed someone new. And I actually posted on my Instagram story and
oh
that's
my
how
gosh.
Michelle found out that we were looking for one. And then I interviewed about 4 or 5 people and she was the one who really stuck out for me. So...
And then LinkedIn, do you guys ever like market on there? Because I know they say LinkedIn is like a good place to find
we
consumers.
Never LinkedIn. I did set up a Seattle LinkedIn page just because I wanted on my LinkedIn to have the actual logo. I hate it when it's blank.
Yeah.
So I set it up, but we never use LinkedIn. We don't hire for head office very often, but the baristas get hired so often and we actually have way more applicants than we can take.
Oh, wow.
But I personally use LinkedIn and I think it's unbelievable.
And I think like a lot of what I was reading is that people are using LinkedIn to like create content on there as well that targets professionals, which I think is really cool. Like I actually have been using the app a lot now just to read posts from like people that I follow because I follow a lot of like just random professionals that I don't even know. I haven't met. I've just like followed them and followed their content. And it's really interesting, like the articles that they share. And it's like a more professional space.
Yeah.
So what are you guys going to tap into that, do you think? Or?
Probably not.
Okay.
I'm really wanting to go to TikTok.
Okay, really?
I want to go to TikTok. I think that Instagram is pretty much over.
Yeah, I agree.
I think Facebook is over too. Although we are still getting huge amounts of engagements on both, which is fun. And so we'll run it until it's done. But it's weird for social media for me because you remember when we had MySpace. MySpace died when Facebook started.
Yeah.
And that was like 2007, so that's when I got Facebook. So that's already 12 years ago, and I really didn't think that Facebook would be around as long
as it has. I'm surprised that I don't even know how to use Facebook anymore. Like, my assistant has to figure it out for me because I don't know how to use it. I literally don't know.
For my personal thing, I just use it for birthdays, and occasionally I'll post like a funny meme just so that people know I'm still alive.
Okay. I changed my profile picture once a year.
And then Facebook, social media, we post on Facebook very often and we get a huge amount of engagement. Yeah. It's all gathered.
So who do you think is the audience that lives on these like various apps in terms of like age?
I think age group, Facebook is definitely older.
Okay. Like when you say older, what age are you talking
35
about?
35 and up.
Okay. So post-millennial.
Yeah, post-millennial. And then I think Instagram is 18 to 35. And then okay. TikTok is... I don't know younger. Who's on there. We have a whole 19 followers.
It's so funny because with my business, I'm nowhere near playing in like the lower age bracket.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting listening to you talk about TikTok and how important TikTok may be in building like a brand loyalty amongst the like youth.
I mean, because the thing is, like, if you think about it in terms of just people having money, mm-hmm. I don't think anyone has less money than millennials.
Yeah.
Like, millennials don't have money. So marketing to millennials is almost... funny. It's like everyone makes a joke like millennials are broke because we buy Avo toast and cappuccinos. Like, but yeah, we so are buying true. The cappuccinos at Seattle. #100%
And Gucci, apparently. Millennials apparently buy a lot of Gucci. Did you know that?
Not South African ones.
Not South African millennials.
I mean, with the exchange
actually,
rate, no,
I don't know. I think like we'd without be surprised.
Rams.
Yeah, with the amount of people like who are investing in blazers and stuff.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Yeah, like, I mean, there's some Gucci flying around.
But
how desperate are millennials that we had to like invent being blessed by an older man?
And sugar daddy.
We literally rebranded sugar daddy and called it blazer, and we were like, you know what, we'll be okay.
I literally read an article that at UCLA in LA, obviously, 75% of women who attended said they had a blessed, well, not a blessed, they don't call it there, they call it a sugar daddy. I mean, because the thing is...
we need to send that branding over to America so that they know.
They know. That
there's
they
a new title,
blessed.
It's blesser.
But the truth is, like, what things cost in, I don't want to say the olden days, but like a while ago.
Yeah.
In terms of how expensive our rent is, how expensive food is,
can
cost.
I just look at like my sister?
And then
like,
what people offer as salaries, it's a joke.
It's a joke.
It's an actual joke that people want us to live like.
I just think of my sister and how she, like, I love that we are 6 years apart. She's so much younger than me. And her way of thinking and how she saves money is so fascinating to me because I don't think about saving money. I'm like, I love Avo on toast.
Okay, like, so you and me are the same.
Yeah, she'll be like, Avo is this price. And like, how can you buy Avo? It's like, just give up Avo for a month. And I'm like,
no, never.
It's not happening. I love Avo.
I remember being like, almost broke, like this is a while ago, like being almost broke, having probably like 200 rand in my bank account. I'm still gonna have a cappuccino.
It's
with
a
almond
joke
milk. I'm not gonna not have my cappuccino with almond milk.
My like, sister I said the my same last thing to me cent. She's like, I thought you're investing in your new brand. And I said, yeah. And she's like, well, why are you going out to eat? And I'm like, yeah, but you don't
it's
understand.
It's not the same thing. These are two different things.
I need to eat out. It's important to me. It's my lifestyle.
Yeah.
So I think that's like where we go wrong. And with our event that I'm doing is like we're focusing a lot on financial planning for millennials and like how we can get ourselves out of debt.
Yeah.
Because obviously I'm in the mom market and I'm focusing
that
on...
That stuff looks very expensive.
Yeah,
being a mother.
Being a mother is expensive. And it's really exciting for me to like go into that avenue and talk to moms about like, how are we going to manage the fact that we fucking love Avos and cappuccino and having sashimi?
Yeah.
And obviously you don't have
and
sashimi.
And living the same life that
living
you have.
Living the life you have plus
three
one.
Kids, yeah.
Yeah, it's hard. And then you have your kid and your kid's like millennial too, so yeah.
He wants Avo and quinoa too.
You're a millennial born kid. Like my kid is born from a millennial. So
he's never going to have cow's milk.
No, he's ever. Like not going to have dairy. He's probably going to be vegan when he's five. Like, you know.
Where's the tofu at?
Like he's like, he does, my son doesn't eat sweets. Like, it's not something that's interesting to him. He doesn't look at it. He doesn't fuck with sweets. He's like, it's not exciting.
He's a broccoli kid.
No, he has dates. Like, he'll say more for a date or a banana or like a date ball.
Don't
he literally
run him
knows.
With like.
No, I can't. Yet. I can't. Even if I wanted to.
Yeah, he won't.
So, the funny story about my kid, and I have to tell a kid's story because I'm a mom and that's what we do. We went to Paris and. In Paris, obviously, there's like, it's croissant heaven. So we used to go to this boulangerie, little bakery, every morning. And he would get a mini croissant. And then we go back to England. And he's like screaming for this croissant at like our Seattle, which was Nero. So he's like screaming for a croissant. And I get him one. He takes one bite and he tosses it out of his pram. Like, literally throws it. And I'm like, oh my God, this bougie-ass kid wants a Parisian croissant. That's what I'm dealing with.
The problem is you gave him the best first.
I know.
You didn't build him up to that.
He's like about the dark chocolate life. Like, don't Cadbury him. He's not going to eat it. He's like, Lindt 90% only.
I'm obsessed.
So, Talia, what's next for you personally and then you within the brand? Like, what are your goals for the brand? What do you feel like you still want to achieve with Seattle now that you're, like, taking over this baby?
There's a lot. There's a vision in my head that I have of how I want the brand to look and to feel and to be. And we've, like, I've been there 14 months. So it's kind of rolling out slowly, but there's still a lot that's in the pipeline and then a lot that I still need to work on. So I kind of have a vision of taking up really from the 1997 look and feel and really bringing it into 2019.
But the 90s are back.
They are back. But I think in a curated way, which is what we kind of need to do more of.
So what about revamping stores? Like, is that something that you guys are into?
Definitely. I mean, I don't know if you've seen the new stores in Joburg, but they are unbelievable.
Really?
The Seattle's that have been opening in Joburg and Rosebank, Cresta, Bram, like, unbelievable
stores.
So
I'm going up to Joburg next week to shoot a TVC, and I'm staying at the Houghton Hotel. Where can I get to a new Seattle?
Have you been to the Mark in Sandton?
No, I haven't. What is it? Tell me everything.
I think it was an old shopping center that they redid the entire thing. And now it looks like a giant gold pineapple.
Oh my God. Okay.
And even it has all the flagship stores. And the Seattle there is just honestly unbelievable.
So I need to go to Seattle at the Mark. And then in Cape, let's just give me all the best Seattles. I want to know all the best ones.
The one in Rosebank.
What's
the Rosebank one?
That one they've just opened. Like, I haven't even been to the one in Rosebank yet. Apparently, that's amazing. There's one in Greenside, which has a beautiful outside area. They're just opening them so fast.
So my favorite Seattle in Cape Town is the one in Woodstock in Solari, because that was like the chicest one I think I could find. In terms of service, the best one in Cape Town though is the
Constantia Village.
Cheapest. I can get into a conversation with the baristas everyone there for like 6 minutes.
I love the baristas at Constantia Village.
They need a revamp. Come on, do it.
I agree.
And where's your next, like, what's your next big thing that you want to tell us that you can tell us about?
That I can tell about Seattle?
Yeah, like, what's happening that we can get excited about your awesome social media?
Besides awesome social media, we're listening to customers a lot more, and I think there are a lot more sugar-free things, gluten-free things. We've been wanting to do that I think will definitely start coming out in the pipeline. And then for me, the whole thing has been like around sustainability.
Awesome.
Because I really want to push a lot more people not using takeaway cups, using those freeze cups. So we have a lot of solutions around that coming through. And that's the stuff that I'm actually really passionate about, because like design is all cool, but like what about climate change?
I'm going to sneeze. I'm not going to sneeze. It's gone. Okay. You know, so my biggest fear is sneezing on a podcast.
Nearly realized, and then you just saved
it was
yourself.
So big. Oh, thank you. I'm so lucky to have producer Simi with me. I'm so glad that you spoke about sustainability and like greenifying your brand. And I'm calling Seattle your brand because you work for Seattle. I think that it's really important for brands to make that adjustment. And I think like you guys are now moving as a leader in. Well, I'm going to say this, I guess, is that you're moving as a leader because you've revamped a brand that seemed like it couldn't get revamping. Like, we were all secretly consuming it. And I think that's exciting for other brand managers and creative directors listening to this. Like, it can be done. And, like, how can we tap into like making our brand a new age brand? And I think sustainability is like a huge part of it.
And I think not, I think they call it greenwashing, but not to do that.
Yes.
Not, and I hate this thing where it says by 2020, we or 2021, yeah. we're going to have done that. Don't fucking tell me what you're going to do.
Yeah, it's just like my dad always says, don't talk about projected earnings because no, it's not real.
It's really not. That's like a thumbs up. Please don't tell me what you're going to do for me in 3-4 years. I'm like, yeah. I don't really care. Tell me, like, do it and then show me what you've done. Yes. And that's really like what we've been working on is behind the scenes. I mean, even if you use your Keep Cup, you don't even have to use a Seattle Keep Cup. You can bring any Eco Cup
That's
into
so
Seattle.
Amazing.
You get 10% off your order. So basically, if you do that 10 times, you get an extra free coffee.
Yeah, because you know, in the UK, that's a huge culture. Yeah. So I would take my cup with me wherever I went and then just rinse it out and yeah. and have a new coffee put in wherever. No one asks you to bring their branded yeah. cup to the, it's like not
I mean,
normal.
Yeah, I think some people do ask for branded, but I mean, but that's again, consumers are saying they want these things, but then you have to get the consumer to put their money where their mouth is.
And yeah.
buy a cup, you don't have to buy a Seattle, buy any cup, but then to actually go out of your way to remember, because I know it is a little bit inconvenient, and I think the actual yeah. the best way around is having probably like 2 or 3, like one at your office desk and one in your,
in
car.
Your car,
so you mm. always have one and then you grab it, because honestly, if you save 10% each time, there's a free coffee every
so for me
coffee.
Like just a tip on doing that, guys, is that I in the morning I always have because I have a lot of coffee meetings in the mornings, I don't drive with my coffee because then I'm going to have another coffee.
Yeah.
It's like exhausting. So what I usually do is I put like a rooibos tea in my cup and I just sip on that while I'm in the traffic because I get loads of traffic when I'm coming in. So that's like 45 minutes. Obviously, you need a drink. So I'll have my rooibos tea. Yeah. So I'll have my rooibos tea in the morning and then I already have my cup in my car, and rooibos tea doesn't really make
stain it.
Yeah,
or
it doesn't stain
taste.
It or make it like stinky or anything. And then I'll just grab it when I'm at another meeting and then ask them to rinse it out for me and just add a new coffee, and it just makes things so much easier. So I don't use a branded cup from any of the coffee brands. I guess it is a coffee brand. I use the Nespresso cup, thermal cup, because it's like really keeps my product warm.
Yeah.
So even if I like was at a meeting, because this often happens to me, I'll be talking like a lot and then I won't actually drink my coffee.
And so it goes cold.
Yeah. So now it's still warm. I can yeah. have it after the client has left me. So that's a cool like sustainability tip, I guess,
yes.
for our podcast.
That's
and
a
then,
great one.
I want you to quickly punt Cheeky Co, because I know you're involved in it. Just tell us a little bit about it before
I'm
we finish.
I'm not directly, oh, I'm a little bit involved. It's so I had Nifty with Lucas. Lucas has now started the Cheeky Co, and his first product is called Orbs, and they basically dry roasted chickpeas encased in dark single origin chocolate, and it is really delicious. It's vegan, it's gluten free, it's not sugar free, it has a tiny bit of sugar, and it's really fucking delicious.
Oh my gosh,
and I'm
so
obsessed
exciting.
With them. I think they're so Moorish, I think they're so different.
Yeah,
I think like if you had wanted the alternatives that are available now, they all have gluten or they have nuts in, and people have allergies to both of those. So I think this is just a fun, different thing. He's done such a good job of the packaging,
yeah.
such a good job of the social media.
Did you
media.
Help out like with the social media or packaging at all?
So he runs everything, but I'm kind of like a little bit of a consultant where he'll
yes,
run
okay.
things. I mean, he gets like my
best
stamp
consultant.
Of approval. But I got to say, it was actually really nice, because once he launched, he actually turned around and said to me, he's like, I finally like actually realized like what you were doing at Nifty, like how much work it took. Because, and I think that's the thing in social media, is everyone thinks it's really fun, it's really easy, it's fast, and like maybe you give that impression, or maybe I give that impression that it is, but it is a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a lot of effort.
And he finally was like, wow, like you actually were doing a lot of work to get this amount of content, this amount of
yeah.
followers. And I said to him, how do you think we got any of our
yes,
customers?
Exactly.
They all came from Instagram. It's not like we didn't have a physical product that was in stores, we didn't have an actual store, we didn't
yeah.
have customers from another business. It was literally everything was done on Instagram.
And that's what I'm finding with my new business, which is the Millennial Mama.
Yeah.
I'm so focused on this eventing business. I'm like, how do I even have time to create content?
Yeah.
I'm in meetings all day trying to
yeah.
pitch my idea.
Ideas.
And then it's like, I don't have time to create content. What kind of content do I create? And that's where the beauty happens, is that you can only create natural content.
Yeah.
Which is like, for
which
those,
is better.
Yeah. For those people out there who like, I think a lot of people listening to this podcast are either working for brands, which is why I wanted you to be here and talk to them and just like give them some direction on where they can be thinking about moving ahead with their personal, the brands that they're working on, or their personal brand. And I think a lot of people get discouraged and think like, oh,
everything has to be professional.
Yes.
You need a photographer, you need
or like
Instagram.
The market's like, oh, you know, this brand has gotten in, into social media first, and like now we'll never ever be able to bring our brand up because we don't have any followers, we don't have any presence. So I think what Seattle's done with their thing is like
super amazing. I started, they have 4,000 followers on Instagram, and they had had that account for years and years. I mean, in 14 months we are nearly, we're about to hit 10,000,
which is a lot in this
landscape. A lot in this market where people don't, firstly people don't like to follow brands in the first place. Like it's much easier to get someone to follow a person than a brand. Like, and also, like, if I follow a brand, like, if they come up on my feed, I often unfollow. Like, why did I ever follow this brand? This makes no sense. Was I trying to win a competition or something?
Yeah, exactly.
To get someone to, like, actually follow a brand is very difficult. And I think also it used to be much easier because you didn't have the algorithm. And now the algorithm kicks you out, basically, and doesn't want to show you. So a lot of people are spending a lot of money boosting posts and sponsoring, and we haven't spent 1 cent.
Really?
Literally, we don't.
That's phenomenal.
I think that's the thing that people don't understand. Literally, it's all user generated. Well, I'm the other user.
Yeah.
And then it's all organic. It's all organic reach. It's not 1 cent that's been spent on Facebook ads or Instagram. That's got a lot actually more to do with my bosses, who just are not about spamming people with marketing.
I also think that's so encouraging, especially like when you have a small business and you like eat tight with budgets, to have to like spend budget on
thousands and thousands.
Yeah. It ends up being so expensive to market on social media.
The thing is that I always think about is like, have I bought anything from Plenty? from an Instagram ad? And the truth is I haven't. I've never bought something. Like when it comes up and it says has that sponsored line, you just completely ignore it. It's like a banner ad, or like a billboard.
I'll never buy it again.
You'll never. Like, it actually pisses you off. It spams you. It's in your feed. Yeah. It's a truth. Like, you hate it.
No, it's intrusive. It is. Because I'm here to chill and you're like, it's my lunch break.
I just want
to
see cute things. Yeah. Whereas like, if you post a beautiful flat layer of a coffee, or you post like your beautiful like collab that you did with Baikara and all of that kind of stuff, that makes me want to buy it because you have it and you're putting your stamp of authority. An ad of something just like, and often those ads are very badly designed
and so generic,
which makes them ugly, and they pop out even more, and you're just like, wow, can I scroll this any faster?
It's so cool to speak to someone. I think that, like, for me, like, it's really cool to have you on the podcast, because we started in the same sort of setting of like being really passionate about, back then I don't think we even knew we were passionate about marketing. It was just like, I'm passionate about something, like creating shit. And then you like create this website, and it takes you to on this journey to eventually finding a job where you can, you know, put that passion back in. And I think like a lot of people think that they need to start their own businesses. And as much as I love small business, I think it's really cool that you decided to go and work for a brand, because you can be successful like in many ways, you know. You can have your own business, you can be an Instagram celebrity, you can be a TV presenter, or you can just work for Seattle and recreate the entire fucking social media presence.
Yes.
And it's all meaningful, and like, it all means something, and it makes you feel, we can hear your passion.
Yeah.
It makes you feel good. And
I think the thing for me has always been about every single thing I do that's new is always growing on what I've done before.
Yeah.
So like everything I started, like when we started, we both probably went to Orms and bought our little cameras.
Yes.
And we're making our little things. And then we tried to figure out what the hell is Lightroom. And like every single step of the way, we've learned more and more and more. And I think the other thing that all of the work in the past has really helped me with is just connections.
Yes.
And in terms of knowing, like, this is a cool photographer and this is someone I want to use. And, like, I want to work with a lot of young creatives. Like, I'm not really interested in working with people who have been doing shooting massive campaigns for people for thousands of years. Like, I don't want anything that looks like it's already been done.
Yeah.
So I'm like, literally, I scour literally Instagram to find young, cool people doing weird shit that I'm like, ooh, why don't we do a whole lot of Spotify covers that were literally shot on film? Like, this makes absolutely no sense to shoot film, double exposure, for something that's going to go live on the internet.
Exactly.
Like, we could just
doesn't
shoot
need
this
iris
on a Canon 5D. And someone literally messaged me and was like, you could just, you know, you could get this effect in Photoshop. I was like, that's not the point. This is art.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, just to have fun and to do weird shit. And I think that's the cool thing that Seattle's given me that I didn't have with Nifty in the past, is that there is budget available to play.
Yes.
And that this is like a first for me to actually have budget
and
to be like realized concept.
Being a business owner.
No, and I think the thing that everyone always asks me is like the biggest difference between having your own business and then having a job. And I mean, Seattle, I still work at as almost
it's
like
hard.
I work at hard. Like I love working. Like I always have a million ideas. I'm always going to be working on it. I mean, the Instagram doesn't stop Saturday, Sunday, 11 p.m. Like all the shit is always still coming through. But I think the biggest difference is that in the past, everything was my problem.
Yeah.
So the Wi-Fi doesn't work at the office. Talia, can you fix the Wi-Fi?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, a customer gets, like, sometimes, like, once or twice we would send the wrong order to someone, or they're missing this photo, or this photo got cropped differently. Every single issue in the business was always my issue that I had to fix, or, like, Lucas and I were fixing. Whereas Seattle, of course, everything, if there's a problem, it's a problem. But, like, there's so many other people who have jobs, and it's their job to fix that. Like, I don't have to worry
about
that.
Everything.
No, I don't have to worry about that the shop's going to be open at this time, and they're going to have almond milk, and they're going to have macadamia, and, like, how this is going to process through the system, and your GPs and all that kind of stuff. I just get to focus on, like, what I want to focus on.
Yeah.
I'm really enjoying that more focused energy.
Well, I just want to firstly thank you, because I feel so inspired after speaking to you, and just, like, these are conversations that I really wanted to have with you for so long. I mean, I've been texting and saying we should get together, but I have, like, the worst schedule. So
you've lived in London?
No, I mean, I'm living in two countries. I'm just all over the place. So I had to drag you onto my podcast to get to know what you're
doing. I loved having this conversation.
No, it's so awesome. And I just want to thank you for inspiring us and our listeners. And just thank you to all the listeners for tuning in. And I hope you guys are super inspired by Talia, because I surely am. Boom.
We out.
This is a POC podcast production. This is a POC podcast
powered by Blue Blood.